And people who do not know the Lord ask, why in the world would we waste our lives as missionaries? They forget that they too are expending their lives, and when the bubble has burst, they will have nothing of eternal significance to show for the years they have wasted. And I won't ask the people at MAF to tell me who that quote came from, but they should know. It's from Nate Saint, and some of you will be familiar with Nate Saint. He was, on the 8th of January 1956, he was killed, along with four other young men, missionaries, and he was killed by the Wuadani tribe. They were known as the Orcas then, in Ecuador, as they attempted to reach them for the gospel. The result of this terrible tragedy is that many Wuadanis have come to know the Lord. And that still might have happened had they lived. But what I don't think would have happened would have been the many, many, many people since 1956 who have gone to serve the Lord because they were inspired by what those five young men did to promote the gospel in Ecuador. So their lives, they lost their natural lives, but they gave their lives to the Lord, and the Lord used that for his glory. So the question I've got to ask you is, what are you expending your life on? When the bubble has burst, as Nate Saint put it, what will you have of eternal significance to show for the years you've spent on earth? Now, I'm not talking about going to serve the Lord in another country, although that might be what God wants you to do. I'm talking about the path that you're taking at the moment, the people you know, neighbours, friends, family, all those sort of things. And have you heard God calling you to something? And if so, are you obeying his voice? And if you are, that is brilliant. That is really great. And you need to be really encouraged by that. But if not, why not? And one of the reasons many people have for not doing what the Lord's calling them to do is because of how they see themselves. And you're probably all familiar with the 12 tribes and 12 spies, rather, that Moses sent into Canaan. And they all saw the same thing, but their response was different. 10 of them saw the wonderful fruits and how good the land was, but they were also very fearful because they saw that the towns were large and fortified and had seen giants there too. Caleb was able to see beyond the problems and wanted to go in, but the others spread a bad report to the rest of the Israelites, saying, "We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers." And that's what they thought too. Now, here's a question for you again. Lots of questions this morning. How did they know that the giants thought of them like grasshoppers? It says, we saw giants. It doesn't say we spoke to them. We saw giants. So they didn't go and ask them, how do you see us? And it would seem that it must be their own perception of themselves. So do you feel like a grasshopper in a land of giants, ready to squash you under their feet, like we do grasshoppers? Those giants, now, that for them, they were proper giants. But for us, we don't have giants, living giants, ready to squash us. But there are an awful lot of things that do become giants in our lives and spiritual obstacles between us and what we feel that God is asking us to do. So now if you listen to the response of Caleb and Joshua, this is what they said. "The land we travelled through and explored is a wonderful land. And if the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It is a rich land, flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord and do not be afraid of the people of the land. They are only helpless prey to us. They have no protection. But the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them." See how different the response was? Not how they felt, but what God can do. Many of us are familiar with that chapter in Hebrews, Hebrews 11, which talks about faith. And the names there are all people who did amazing things to serve God. What we forget is that they weren't super people, but just ordinary men and women. But they chose to serve a supernatural God and an extraordinary God too. Now, one of the people mentioned, he's mentioned sort of as an afterthought almost, but one of the people mentioned there is in verse 32 is Gideon. And this is what it says in Hebrews 11, 32. "And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson and Jephthah, about Daniel and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword." So, Gideon merits a place up there among the greats. I just want us to look at Gideon and see what he was like to start with. Hebrews 11:34 continues, "whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies." Gideon's weakness was turned to strength, and so can ours. Gideon started out weak, just like you might be feeling at the moment. Judges chapter 6 says that for 7 years the Lord had given the Israelites into the hands of the Midianites because they had worshipped other gods. Gideon's own father had an altar to Baal and Asherah poles, so even his family weren't exempt. They were terribly oppressed and had to hide away. And when they planted crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites would ruin them and take the livestock. Eventually, as we often do eventually, they cried out to the Lord for help, and he sent a prophet, and he reminded them of the times in their history when he had rescued them. But they had not listened to him. So in other words, one could read between the lines that they brought it upon themselves, really, due to disobedience. But God is merciful and gracious, and he still wanted to give them a way out, as we see in Judges 6. "The angel of the Lord came and sat down under a tree in the land belonging to Gideon's father, just where Gideon was threshing wheat." Where was he threshing wheat? In a wine press. Why was he threshing wheat in the wine press and not on the threshing floor? Both are fine for the job that they were meant to do. A wine press making wine, and the threshing floor is for threshing wheat, separating the wheat from the chaff. Now, in those days, I gather, and those of you who are biblical scholars, which I'm not, would be able to help me with this, but in those days, a wine press was actually built under, not underground, but on a lower piece of ground with a wall around it. So it was cut into the ground, in other words. And there would be two separate chambers, one for pressing the grapes and then the other one for the liquid from the grapes, the juice, to go separated. A threshing floor was out in the open. So they'd put all the or the grain, the cereal, rather the wheat or whatever it was, on the floor. They would get animals like oxen or cattle or whatever to walk on it to start to separate it, or men would beat it with flails. And then they would take things like winnowing forks, and I'm just sort of peering at my writing, so winnowing forks and things like that, and thresh it so that throw it up in the air, and the wind would blow the chaff from the wheat, and the wheat would be heavier, so that would fall to the ground, and the chaff would be blown away. Right, now, Gideon was in the wine press. So why? Because of fear. He was afraid that if he was out on the threshing floor, the Midianites would come and steal all his grain. So he was hiding away. So are you hiding in a wine press rather than being out on the threshing floor? When you think about it, and you're on the threshing floor, it's going to be dusty, it's going to be dirty, probably hot, hard work. But then think about what it would be like in a wine press doing the same thing. It'd be dusty, it would be dirty, it would be even harder work because there'd be no wind. I say it was cut out of the ground. So the wind wouldn't be blowing away all the chaff. It would be presumably floating all around you, getting in your eyes, and all the things that would happen trying to do it there. So that's what fear can do. We can be hiding away somewhere because we're so fearful, but we're actually doing a lot of what we might have been doing outside if we weren't afraid, but we're doing it hidden away, and it's making what we're doing an awful lot harder than if we'd just gone and done what we need to do in the right place at the right time. And that was what Gideon was doing. He was working really hard. So there's Gideon fearfully hiding out in the wine press, and this angel's there. And what does it say to him? The first thing he says to him, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." So God already knows us. He knows our faults and failings, doesn't he? But he also sees our potential in him. So the angel says to him, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." So then Gideon asks the angel a question. "But if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us?" Does that sound familiar? Have you ever said, "Oh God, I know you're there, I know you're here, but why? Why is it all happening to me? Why is it this happening now?" And the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of the Midianites' hands. Am I not sending you?" Notice the Lord doesn't say, "Go in my strength," or even, "You will have supernatural strength," but "in the strength you have." The important bit, I think, on that one is that he says, "I am I not sending you?" It's not our strength, but God sending us that matters. So if God, we know that God is sending us or telling us to do something and we feel weak, we don't need to wait for this sort of wonderful supernatural strength. We just need to obey and go. And then God, because God sent us, he will give us the strength to continue. Gideon didn't change straight away. So it wasn't that God said, "Go and I'll be with you," and you know, "Righto, now I'm big, strong, health man, you know, God's here, he's going to look after me. It's not me, it's God," etc. Because after that, it goes on to say that God told him to go and pull down the altar that his father had to Baal and the Asherah poles, and to offer a sacrifice there. And what did Gideon do? He did it. He did obey, but he did it at night not because he was afraid of the Midianites this time, but he was afraid of his family and the townspeople and what they would say if they saw him doing it. So I want to encourage you that change can be sudden. You can suddenly, God can suddenly change you overnight. I'm sure there are stories of when he does. But it's usually a process. Little by little, step by step. You know that song, step by step, being stronger, little by little, we're taking ground. You know the one? And the wonderful thing is, God is patient with us. And parents, and that you notice parents or people that have got a lot to do with children, close to children, that they're so thrilled when their children do anything. You know, as a few parents are smiling, James is smiling, but that how many of you have children when they're little and they're doing things that they get it right, perfectly, absolutely, the first time they do it? Anybody? Put your hand up. You've got a child that gets everything right first time? Oh, I can't see any hands raised. No, they don't, do they? They might be slow, but the parents, they just love it, don't they? Don't you just love it when you see this child who couldn't do something and the child walking, what about walking? They're sort of holding onto a chair and then they take one step and then they take two steps and then they're down on the ground. But you don't say, oh, right, now you can walk, keep going. You've got to walk all the way down the aisle here. You can't just take two steps and then fall down. You've got to walk. No, we don't. We go, oh, did you see her? She took two steps. Oh, that's so wonderful. She took two steps. And that's I believe, how God is with us. He's our Heavenly Father, isn't he? He's our perfect Father. And He was watching us. He's watching what we're doing. He knows what we're doing anyway. But we take that first tentative little step to obey him in doing something that he's called us to do. And I should imagine saying to the angels or whatever, oh, look at him. He's just taking two steps. Oh, look, he's not afraid anymore. He's just taking two steps. And that must really please God. He doesn't mind if we make a mess or we're struggling, because all he wants from us is for us to obey him. And however that sort of, however long that takes, as long as we're sort of going in the right direction, I think that he's pleased with us. And what's more, as he says to Gideon, he's going to be with us. So he's going to be helping us every step of the way. And when we fall down, when your child falls down, what do? Do you leave it there? No, you help it up, don't you? And that's what God does with us. If we fall down, he helps us up again. So, I get back to my original little Nate Saint quote. What are you doing that will be of eternal significance? Now, some of you know, but if you don't know, why don't you ask God to show you? And who knows, you might be surprised to find out that when you ask God to show you, that you're already actually doing it, and you didn't know. And if that's the case, that's even more brilliant, isn't it? But if not, why don't you ask him? And if you know he's asking you to do something, and you're in the wine press trying to do it there rather than out on the threshing floor, why don't you ask him to help you to take that step across to the threshing floor? The work might still be really hard on the threshing floor, as I said earlier. It might still be dirty, it might still be all sorts of things, and there would be dangers because, like with the Midianites, he would have been seen by the Midianites. But it would be much, much better doing the work there than trying to hide away in the wine press. So, That's my thing. But if you did want to have prayer, there's lots of people here that would pray with you. If you're in any of those situations, if you know what God's called you to do and you're doing it, but you'd like prayer to help you to do it even more, that would be brilliant. If you know God's called you to do something, but you're too afraid to do it, and you'd like prayer for that, I'm sure someone would be willing to pray for you for that. And if you don't know what God's called you to do, then there'd be people who'd be willing to pray for you for that as well. So lots of things there that you could ask God to help you with, and someone will pray with you for it. So I'll hand back to James, Joe.